The Beat Podcast is brought to you by Nutritia and is designed for healthcare professionals only. This episode is specifically for healthcare professionals with an interest in inherited metabolic conditions. Asking the questions in this episode is Dr. James Nurse, a consultant paediatrician.
Hello, welcome to this metabolic podcast brought to you from Nutritia. I'm your host, James Nurse, a consultant paediatrician interested in inherited metabolic disease and medical education. Throughout this series, I'm hoping we can all learn a little bit more about the curious field of metabolic medicine with its strange-sounding diagnoses and befuddling pathways. We're opening the series by meeting some of the people who deliver the service, the members of the metabolic multidisciplinary team. And in today's episode, I'm joined by Mr. Alex Pinto, not yet a doctor, but doing his PhD now, a dietitian with a difference because his primary focus is research and his work with patients is always in a trial setting. Hello, Alex. Thank you for making the time to speak with me.
Hi, James. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Alex, could we begin really at the beginning by asking a little bit about yourself and how you came to work in metabolic medicine?
So, first of all, I'm Portuguese, so from Portugal. So I started my first contact with metabolic disorders was back in Portugal. While I was doing my bachelor degree, we have, on the last year of the degree, we have to do an internship. And that was when I had my first contact under the supervision of Julio Rocha. Then I came to Birmingham for an internship because I wanted to learn a bit more about dietetics in IMD because I thought it was really interesting. So I came to have an internship with Anita McDonald. As you know, she's one of the most experts in the world of metabolics. So I wanted to learn from her. It has been almost 5 years now. And still here, started to help out with some research, and now I'm doing my PhD on PKU.
I mean, it sounds like you've had some incredible mentors in terms of Dr. McDonald and Dr. Rocha. Would you say that you chose metabolics, or did it kind of rather choose you?
It was interesting actually because while I was doing my degree there was not a lot of things that I really liked in general dietetics, and it was more like I remember I really liked sports nutrition, and the other thing was when I did came into contact with metabolics, I thought actually this is really interesting. There was so much still to discover. I thought the interesting concept for me was because diet made such a huge difference in helping out patients on patients' lives, such a huge impact. I thought that was great, and I wanted to work with that.
No, I imagine you can still do a little bit of sports nutrition because there's certainly a lot of interest about doing sports on low protein diets. And we see some of the ketogenic ketone esters being used in sports nutrition as well.
So. Yeah, I mean, and it's still, if you look into the literature, there is not as much research, for example, looking at, for example, professional athletes with the PKU, for example. I think there is only a couple of case reports and probably one trial looking at exercise and PKU, for example. So that's an area that probably maybe in the future we can do something on it. So yeah.
Cool. Always looking for ideas.
Yes.
What kind of training did you have to get to where you are now?
So, I mean, the basic one was my bachelor degree back in Portugal in nutritional sciences and dietetics. Then I have done after that a module, which is the module for, I think it's organized by the British Dietetic Association together with the University of Plymouth. And that module is about dietary management in IMD. I have done as well a couple of other modules more on research, so quantitative research, qualitative research, doing systematic reviews. I mean, I try to keep doing that. I think it's important just to learn more.
You said you came to Birmingham sort of under the stewardship of Anita, who is really, you know, everything in terms of metabolic dietetics. Were you immediately a research dietitian, or did you move from being a clinical dietitian to a research dietitian?
Yeah, this is interesting, I think, because I think my path is a bit different from everyone else. Usually people start with clinics and then with clinical work and then move a bit into research or do it half-half. With me, I started straight into research. It's not that I don't like clinics. I like it, and I think it's really important. It was just a question of opportunity. It came up. I wanted to do it. I liked it, so I just went into research straight away.
And research sometimes can seem, although we need it to guide sort of everything we do, it can seem quite removed from the daily practice for many dietitians. Mm-hmm. I suspect that our listeners probably know what the day-to-day role of an inherited metabolic disorder dietitian is. So how does, you know, being a research dietitian differ? What does your day involve?
A lot of things. It can start from doing things like preparing all the documents that involve a research project. So for example, all the consent forms, information sheets. Well, first, before that, we have to create the project. So we have to create the protocol. Then all those related documents need to be prepared, and they need to be submitted to the HRA, which is the Health Research Authority. So we have to submit all of that. And then we have to, for example, have a meeting with the ethics committee. So for example, attending the meeting and answering questions from the ethics committee. And then it will be, when we have the project, we need to start recruitment. That it's quite time consuming. We have to perform the study. So it would be either, for example, with the home visits or the research visits can be home visits or hospital visits. It depends on the type of study. It can go from, I don't know, data collection on databases. After compiling all the data, we need to analyze it, write manuscripts, review papers for other colleagues as well. So, I mean, there is such a wide range of things that we need to do in research. It's never ending.
I'm not sure you're selling it. There's lots of meetings, it seems.
Yes.
When you start, how do you come up with these ideas for things you want to research? Are they from within your team? Are you looking to build on the work of others? Or is it, you know, are your patients asking you questions that you're having to answer? What do you do?
I think it's a bit of everything. I think the best research questions come up from daily practice when you actually are seeing the patients. I think they are the ones that give you the best ideas. The main aim of our research is always answering a question, and we hope that that changes patients' lives. So if that question comes from an interaction from patient, even better.
Could you give an example of that?
So for example, we are, for example, doing a research study on PKU, looking at how different types of food sources of protein, for example, will impact on blood phe control. And that comes from dealing with patients. So they are allowed, for example, a number of exchanges. So, for example, if we find out that they actually can tolerate that type of food better, and that doesn't impact on their control, they could have that freely. So that's a good example of something that could have a huge impact.
And is that when you? I mean, sorry to be specific on a very small area here, but I suppose that you know, for PKU patients, these are you know they're often on tiny amounts of protein in a given day. Is this sort of as simple as animal protein versus plant protein, or is it more complicated than that?
I mean, we are doing something. Comparing one against the other, and I'm not saying that what the results will be, but that's the aim, like to find out if there is any differences and if there is a type of, for example, fruit and vegetable that they can eat freely. That, for example, they currently can't. So when you have such amount of such a small amount of protein, for example, some patients are only on, for example, 4 or 5 grams of protein a day, which is quite low, as you know. That wouldn't make a huge impact. So it's things like this. This was just an example, but sometimes it's something easier.
And you're obviously not going to give us any sneak peeks or previews on your work there.
No, not on this one.
Maybe next time. So I don't think I realized that you and I basically embarked on our metabolic journeys around the same time, about 5 years ago, and you certainly put me to shame because you've been, you know, you're now leading your own research. You mentioned that you're doing a PhD now on PKU. Is that's around this, comparing these different proteins, or is it something different?
So I'm currently doing my PhD, as I said, on PKU. So I'm looking at different aspects of the diet, and that project is one of them. But I'm looking at different aspects of the diet and how they impact on metabolic control. But I've done other projects, not only on PKU, but for example in citrulline deficiency, propionic acidemia, and several other very rare conditions. And it goes from, for example, on my PhD, we have more like randomized controlled trials, but I've done some retrospective work, case reports, also a lot of multi-center work and questionnaires with other colleagues in throughout the UK and also in Europe. And I have also participated in for example, questionnaires on asking directly patients on issues, specific issues with the diet. So actually, that's a very good example of something that's just a simple thing like a questionnaire to the patients can give you a lot of ideas of what's going on. And sometimes people think it's not like research, but it actually gives you a lot of good ideas and what actually are the problems on the daily life of a patient.
And so that's a simple way that a clinical dietitian can collaborate around research, isn't it?
For example, yeah.
By being your kind of eyes and ears in a local centre. You've been in the game now for 5 years. Has the research field sort of changed in the time you've been around in terms of demands of what you're doing and funding applications?
Yes, I mean, as you know, it's everything is always changing really fast. One of the things that changes for me on a negative side is, for example, when trying to submit applications for the health research authority, they are always, or they do change a lot the submission process. So I do find myself in every time I go to submit a new project, something has changed, documents that I have to supply, and usually it's usually never easier than before. It's always to give you more work and a bit harder. So I don't think that's good. For example, when you have new people trying to do research, you can get a bit overwhelmed in the beginning with that process, which is not good. But on the good side of things, it's the use of technology to do research. I think we have been trying, we have done that before, but I think it's going to be something that we are going to start using more and more, which is like, for example, doing videos to explain the research. And for example, I work with children, and I think that's really good. It's almost like not replacing, but it's a bit like an information sheet, but on a video. And I think that it's much better to capture the attention of a child, for example, because I don't think they would be that keen to look for a long time to an information sheet and read everything. But if you show an animation video with some funny characters, I think they will be happy to watch it, and probably it will be an easier way to engage them as well.
It's a difficult field to compete in. Are we going to see you dressed up in silly clothes on information videos coming soon?
Maybe.
I think that there's a worry sometimes about the ethics of research, either because we may be offering a therapy that is less good than what is currently available, or there are some patient communities that can feel slightly reluctant to engage, having been a bit burnt by research, where they've been offered a therapy in the past that has been approved and then subsequently not made available to them after the trial has been completed. And I don't know whether you can comment on how research is regulated and how we manage that kind of slight ethical quandary there.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the worry of the patients. And I know that has happened in the past, that patients were given a therapy and doing a research trial and then taken off afterwards. I think nowadays, usually there is an agreement with a sponsor to keep giving the same therapy afterwards, even if it's not given freely by the NHS. However, I can understand that as a patient, you doubt if it's really worth it to get into this study and then not being given. Being given it afterwards.
And obviously you go through ethical committees when you're developing your studies, so if the dietitians who are speaking to these patients about your studies can be very reassuring, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I mean, usually you have to be really honest and with the patient when you are recruiting. I think it's one of the things that are important, is you have a good relationship with the patient, and honesty is crucial. I mean, you have to tell patients what's going to happen, all the advantage and disadvantages. And if that's the case, that they are not getting it afterwards, that needs to be something that it needs to be told from the beginning to the patient. However, I think nowadays there is ways of doing that differently.
It's obviously it's a difficult subject, and not a study around dietetic research.
Yes.
In the 5 years that you've been in the field, can you give an example of practice changing as a consequence of your research or the research that you've worked around?
One of the things I can remember is we as a dietitians group from the BIMDG, we have worked, for example, on defining exchanges and on a uniform approach, so having the same definitions for everyone, and that has been done by thorough discussions and by the Delphi method. And I think that was quite an important piece of work. It's quite detailed, and that's information that then it's passed on to patients. For example, as you know, with defining exchanges for PKU, some foods are really easy to do, but then others is a bit complicated, because they can have a little amount of phenylalanine, but then it depends on the amounts that you eat or drink, for example, if it's a milk. So I think that we have worked on those definitions, and I think that's quite a good piece of work. I was thinking about there are other projects that I've participated that perhaps there wasn't like a direct impact, but I think perhaps indirect. So I'll give you an example. We do a lot of questionnaires asking for practice around Europe, for example. And it's like details on how you manage a specific condition. And as you know, in Europe, I mean, we have different resources, so we do things differently. But it's good to have like different opinions and different perceptions. I think the fact that other dietitians are filling in the questionnaires, they are doing something that maybe they don't do in their daily practice, which is they are thinking about what they are doing actually, like, because you are asking those questions, they ask themselves, okay, I do this in this way, is there another way that maybe it's better? And I think is that exercise, it's a very simple thing to do, but maybe in the end that changed the way those dietitians were doing their practice, for example.
Certainly important to sort of shift ourselves out of the rut that we can continue to occupy the same path without reviewing our practice. You've mentioned collaboration with European colleagues there, and there's certainly lots of now European-wide guidelines that are coming up, not just around PKU, but around other metabolic disorders, galactosemia being one that is a European-wide guideline, I think. I don't like to bring up the B word, but do you think the UK status in the European Union is likely to affect work, or could it strengthen international cooperation, for example?
I think in metabolics, it's probably a bit different from other areas, because I don't know how you feel, but I feel that we work very close together, even before with other European countries, because we have such a small number of patients, like comparing with other conditions, because in the end, I mean, in the end, we are dealing with rare disorders. So, and for example, for research, usually on other conditions, you are looking at huge numbers. And when you look at the studies with the PKU, the numbers are pretty small. So we are used to work together. And so I don't think it will be that much of a change. I think the change will be, for example, if there is new regulations coming into place, new guidances that may change. And for example, if you are doing a multi-center study, you can find, have a bit of a hurdle. But apart from that, I think our relationship with our European colleagues will be as good as it was before.
And have you got any sort of big sort of national collaborations or international collaborations coming up?
Most of our work is multi-center, either in the UK and some of them with the European colleagues. That's something that we do. And as I said before, because of the small numbers, we need to keep working together. It's good as well to open your mind to other ways of thinking. So we are always open to do international and national collaborations. I think that's the way to go forward in research.
You've obviously made a good case for the importance of research. Do all metabolic teams need a research dietitian, or should all dietitians do a bit of research?
I think definitely the team should have a research component in their team. I know it's sometimes not easy for clinical dietitians to do research because of it's time consuming. You need time, and you also have your responsibility as a clinical dietitian. But I think it's important. Research is basically the base of your action as a dietitian, what you decide to do with a patient, and basically your dietary management should be based on science. So I think it goes together, and I think if you do both, it improves you as a dietitian, because you start thinking about things in a different way. It's like when you are in a clinic, if you have done some research, I think you have some critical thinking into the practice rather than actually going and just, because sometimes it's, I think in clinics you go a bit automatic, you do it because you have always done it like that. And when you start doing research, probably you start putting things into perspective, asking yourself if that's the right thing to do, or could you do it in a better way. So I think it goes hand to hand, and I think definitely having research dietitians in your team. It's good.
I mean, it sounds like from what you're saying, even just engaging in supporting around research and adding questionnaires may just be enough to help change people's practice or inspire them to think a bit more about their practice. Hopefully you've inspired a few budding researchers today. You're very young, that's how I see it. You're very young, but yes. You've already got a lot of papers to your name, including as a first named author. If you were starting out on this route again, at that moment where Anita pulled up, opened the door into the mini metro and said, right, get in, we're going on a road trip. Is there anything that you'd do differently?
I don't think I would do anything different. I wouldn't change anything, but looking forward, I think there is always things to improve, and it would be like get more knowledge on things that I think probably I don't know that much, probably about statistics or other tools to do systematic reviews, things like that to improve my knowledge onto research. But I mean, the idea for everyone else is don't stick too much at that, because for example, statistics, there are a statistician that can help you with that, professionals. So if there is something that you don't know that well, just ask for someone's help.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I think sometimes it can feel like, although we're in this big team, that we don't necessarily know what all the different parts do. So it's really excellent to kind of get your insights around to research and that basic message of, you know, you don't have to do what you're doing, but you just need to do it. Be really useful to do something. I think if you're listening to this and you want to know more about the other members of the MDT, then do check out the other episodes in this series. Alex, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.
To keep up to date with future episodes of the Beat podcast from Nutritia, make sure you subscribe on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts on. For more updates on the show, as well as lots of other educational content from Nutritia, sign up to our newsletter at www.nutritia.co.uk. We'll be right back.